I started to say this morning, Ki Sisa is Rosh B'nai Yisrael of Kudei Heaven Osnu Ishkofer Nafsho. What is the point of Ishkofer Nafsho? We always tend to think that it has something to do with the Egel or, you know, Kofer Nafsho. The Abarbanel makes a very interesting point that it has nothing to do with that. I mean, we don't want to say, first of all, the point is, and I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago during Shia, because we were discussing it on some level, why in general, of course, we always assume what the reason is why we only had to give Chatzi Shekel. And, you know, half for us, we're partnership with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, half here, half there. Actually, the Abarbanel made a point early on in Truma to say that all the midos that we're talking about, all the measurements, the word midah, are half and half. And that was for the purpose of not so much to say that we're partnership with God as well, but the reality is the partnership represents God's, it's connected, there's a Beis HaMikdash Lamala, and we're building a Mishkan Lamata here, and God's measurement up there is also in halves, and so together we make one whole. It's a partnership in whole. And that's the reason for our measurements. There's only one midah, by the way, that is not in the half measurement, which is what? One midah is a complete midah. It's not like 200 and a half, two and a half, five. That's the Mizbeach. Why the Mizbeach only? Because the Mizbeach represents to bring karbonis and kapor al avonos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have any avonos to be mechaper for. So we have to, when we bring a carbon, we have to give all of ourselves, we have to make a complete commitment to the idea of to do tshuva, to be mechaper on avonos that has nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in terms of partnership. It's all us. So the Mizbeach had no half midah. It's just an interesting thought process. But the point is over here, Chatzi Shekel. He makes a point of saying over here that Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar were cash poor. Where did they have dollars from? They came out with all this gold and silver and jewelry and things like that, but they didn't have any coins in terms of that. They didn't have a printing press. Benjamin Franklin wasn't around in the Midbar to operate a printing press. So where did they get the money from? So all the money that they had to be able to generate was going to be from the surrounding merchants, which were constantly passing through, and they did business with the surrounding nations, who would pass by in caravans and things like that. But still in all, since they were cash poor, they had to, God wanted to institute a situation where they could kill two birds with one stone. They needed the silver for Adonim. What did they use? They used the shekel for Adonim. So if you get yourself a chatzi shekel from one shekel, you could accomplish two things. You can give half for the Adonim and half for the Kofer Nafsho. What does the Kofer Nafsho represent? The Kofer Nafsho represents when we use the term gulgolis. That's a head, you're taking a head count. You want to know how we have a standing army of 603,550. First of all, the question is, according to the Machlokis in general, what does the term ki sisa? God is not telling you to actually do the counting. He's saying if and when you want to count, this is how you have to do it. All right, that's part of the equation. But the reality is, God wants to let us know. We know the concept, where does it come from? Tzedakah tatzil mimavis. Where does that whole concept come from? He says, when you go to battle, so what, every country in the world, they want to know troop strength. Then you take a look and you say, well, we have 500,000 soldiers. They only have approximately 300,000 soldiers. The tables say that we should easily overcome our enemy. We'll win. We are stronger than you and things like that. But in terms of being a Jew, but that takes God out of the equation. It's saying that God doesn't exist. You know, for the mere fact that we outnumber you, we should be able to beat you. That's all. And very simple. So what I want you to do, the purpose of giving the Machzis HaShekel is, you give a Machzis HaShekel to say that I am willing to invest and admit to say that my troop strength really doesn't have too much to do with it. If I'm a Shomer Torah mitzvot, if I give tzedakah before I go to battle, that is what will save me. It's up to God to do what it is. That's what I always like to say, Vayivarech David, Hashem li'enei kol hakol, David did that. And he makes a point over here of saying also, and he says, you can look it up in Shmuel, he's more ma'arech about it, that the reason that everybody was killed in the time of David because they didn't give Maksas HaShekel or whatever it is, had nothing to do with them not giving Maksas HaShekel. They deserved, the Bnei Yisrael deserved punishment at that time for the Avera of Sheva ben Bichri. He just makes that point. And so that's just a very interesting point about the point of making the Maksas HaShekel. So, let's see. All right. So now, what does the Maksas HaShekel represent? I said that, in faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, also, one very interesting thing, one other pasuk, which is, what was the whole idea of Yoshua? It says, Umisharaso, he darshens the pasuk, Umisharaso, in other words, the purpose of saying, Umisharaso Yoshua bin Nun nar lo yamish mitocha ohel. What is the purpose? Why was Yoshua, there was Zakenim, there were other people who were certainly greater in knowledge and greater in Koyach and Mayach in terms of being the next manig of Bnei Yisrael than Yoshua? What is the purpose of saying over here, the purpose of the words, U'mishoreso Yoshua bin Nun nar lo yamish mitocha ohel? And it's to me, it just makes a big difference. I know growing up, and I was, you know, just sitting in shul long before I had smicha, and we were sitting and talking, and a rabbi who we quote here often, and he grew up in a family that wasn't particularly a from family and at all, and he was, when he was after high school, he went to Eretz Yisrael. He's a big rav today, and he wrote a lot of svarim. But we were discussing something, and somebody asked him a question. He didn't know the answer, and he looked at me, and I told him exactly what to do. And a few times he says, how come you know all these things? I don't know. I mean, I'm going for smicha, and I'm sitting, and I learn all day. But how do you know these things? And I said, I don't know. It's osmosis. I grow up. My father was always telling me, this is what, you know, he didn't just say, this is what we do. He used to tell me, because he was a Rebbe, this is what we're going to do, and this is why we're going to do it. And he would a lot of times take out a sefer and show it to me and say, this is where it says it, this is the reasoning behind it, and this is why we make the halacha this way. And that was generally the way I grew up. So I just assumed that way, and a lot of my friends, I just somehow a thought when I was a little kid that everybody went through that, you know, their father teaches them what to do. But the point is, the point of saying Yoshua bin Nun nar lo yamish mitocha ohel, other people, they learned a lot, they knew more than Yoshua. The difference with Yoshua is, ain't a doma shmila re'iyah that we see in the parsha. Yoshua was with Moshe, he got an education, being not just learning. When Moshe came down and taught Bnei Yisrael Torah mitzvahs, Yoshua was with him day in and day out, all day, all night, and he got to experience life with Moshe. The best example, he was a role model for him, and he understood everything about Moshe because he never left his side. And that is where the greatest, from that experience that he had, that is the opening to say Yoshua will be the next leader, because he stayed with him constantly and never left his side. And that's what we learned from that. Now, getting to Ein Domer Re'iyah L'Shmiyah, Ein Domer Shmiyah L'Re'iyah, is the same thing when Moshe is on Har Sinai. And it says, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, after he hears, you know, Moshe comes down, Vayaris Ve'egel U'Mucholos, and by Ashlech, we are Dovis Haluchos. The reality is, beforehand, God said to Moshe that everything he tells him, everything that was happening on Har Sinai. I mean, that he's on Har Sinai and he tells him, Lech Reit Ki Shichei Samcha, Asher Aleisa Mimitzrayim. Everything they've gone astray. They've gone to forget about it. It's a disaster. And all of this. And they're having a conversation. God's telling them exactly what's going on. And now, God, Moshe is already praying for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to give him another break. You know, after all, it's only 6-7 weeks out of Mitzrayim, and they're still steeped in it. You got to give them, you're foisting on them all these things. They want a break. You know, it's summer vacation. You finally got out from, you finished your finals, and, you know, you want to go find yourself for a year and things like that. It's, you know, I need, give me a break for a while. So to speak. Let us get off the schneid, so to speak, and have vacation time, whatever it is. Give them a break and let them grow a little bit, let them sow their wild oats. And this is, it's hard to get that. And then all of a sudden he comes down and he sees, and he throws the luchos and he smashes them. So didn't he already know? Well, there's a machlokis, exactly what did Moshe see? In other words, what did he assume? We assume that Bnei Yisrael were the eagle represented, you know, so to speak, to represent God. But the reality is it wasn't God that was missing. It was Moshe Rabbeinu who was missing at this point in time. It was Moshe who wasn't available anymore. And they said that. Kizeh Moshe Oish Asher We don't know what happened to him. So the Egel, in effect, is according to some Rishonim, I think the Ramban makes that point as well, that the Egel was to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. When God is telling him, Lech Rei Ki Shichei Samcha, what is Moshe assuming here? What is Moshe's reaction here? It's something against God. That's what it would seem on the surface. That's the way we think about it. But when Moshe sees the Egel and he sees what's going on, Vayaris Egel Mucholos, and he realizes that it's him that they're trying to replace, he loses his temper. And he Vayashlech Miyodovas Haluchos, is God's reaction to him says, so tell me, how does it feel? You're upset, aren't you? So he says, you know, when you thought that it was me that they're trying, when I was telling you, the eagle is going on, they're dancing, all these things that is going on, I'm insulted. So now you're trying to placate me. But now when you come down and you see they're trying to placate you, you lost your temper. So now, how does it feel? That's the way it's what happens, the way I look at it. This is my approach, the way I would say why at this point he lost his temper, because he saw it. But of course, Ein Domer Shmiel L'Re'iyah, when you see it, it sort of like conjures up the whole situation all over again and you boil over. But the reality is just that. Now, who is the ones who said, obviously, when we say who built the Egel? So when it says, Vaypol Minoam Bayomahu Kishloshes Alfeish, 3,000 people. So who are these people and what was who committed the chait? And this is always a very important thing to realize. Who would say, obviously, but where do we get that from? Because when anybody who would say, I wouldn't come down here and if I saw something happening, I would say to you, El Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God. A Jew wouldn't talk that way to another Jew. It's, you know, I would say, look what we have, look what we've come to. You put yourself in equation. It's like at the Seder when you say, you know, Mo Avodah Zos Lochem, to you. So the idea is, Elo Lecha Yisrael. So it has to be the Erev Rav talking, because the reality is very simple. I mean, you wouldn't speak like that. So obviously it's the Erev Rav. So if it's only the Erev Rav who are fomenting this rebellion and starting the whole idea of building the Egel, then what is the chait? Obviously is the people who fall in line and don't do anything about it. They, yeah. So the point is, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. You have to stand up. And we see that too many times today in society. We, you know, listen, leave me out of it. I don't want to know. It doesn't affect me. Everything affects us. We're Kol Yisrael Arev Mzeh Lo Zeh, and that what we have to say. And that's why the Torah says, Ocheach Tochiach Es Amisecha. It's like JetBlue. We're all profit sharing corporation. If you see somebody walking in on the company, I always remember one particular situation in my life when there was this one person who I did business with, and he was his mother-in-law ran the business. She was already in her late 80s, and he kept saying to me, he can't wait for her to go already. And he had a play, you know, on the West Side, and it was a very successful business. And this lady was a big Baal Tzedakah. He wasn't from, and I don't know how from she was, but she gave a lot of money to Emunah women. You know, at that time it was still Hapoel HaMizrahi, the women. She was a poster child for them. She gave tremendous amount of tzedakah to various Jewish organizations. And she was already 88 years old when she died, and she ran a big corporation, and only on her own. And somebody used to tell me all the time that, you know, there's a lot of theft going on in that company. And I said, it's impossible. There's only one guy that gives out the stuff, Eddie. And he said, yeah, that's right. I said, really? I can't believe it. Finally, I mean, listen, she was already almost 90 years old, and she finally passed away. And he took over the bit. He was so happy. He was so over the moon. Now he got to be the boss. He was moving off the shipping floor, was sitting in the office in his mother-in-law's chair, and he put his... I came in on a Friday. I needed something that I ran out of, so I left a couple of people in the office. I said, I want to go. I'm going to go see him now. I know he's the new boss. I'm going to go pick up a couple of boxes or something. I'll just go in my car, drive up. It was only like about a mile and a half away from my place. And I get in the car, I drive up, and it's Friday morning. Usually it's a madhouse on Friday because you're getting ready, you're closing. Even in a non-firm place, you're closing. They all closed early on Friday, break away for the weekend. I come in on a Friday morning when it's crazy. He's got his feet up on a desk. And I see his feet up on a desk. I said, really? I said, how long do you think you're going to be in business like that? In the meantime, as it turned out, he wasn't in business long because he died in a plane crash a couple of weeks later. So he was a boss only for a couple of weeks. Well, he was flying his own plane. He had a plane. It was a successful business. He was in the plane on a Friday night over Albany. And he called up Monday morning. They said, you hear what happened to Eddie? He got to be boss for 2 weeks. But I was saying he wasn't long for this business because he put his feet up on a table. Once you take your foot off the gas pedal and you let go, there's a very interesting... It's from the Satmar Rebbe, and I use it a lot of times. It's the introduction to Pirkei Avos. And the introduction of Pirkei Avos from the Satmar Rebbe is, he's telling people that a sod that you have to realize. You have a lot of people today, we see it a lot of times in society, there are people who are very, very from, he was talking to his Olam, obviously, and obviously he saw that a lot of people in his situation, a lot of people in the Beis Medrash there were, you know, their children weren't the same as they were. Their children were less than they were. They were maybe from, but they didn't meet up their standards. Pesach, everybody stays home. You don't mimishzichnish. You don't go to somebody else's house to eat, or you make allowances. Like I said, in Baal Oscha, by Korban Pesach, it says, V'esha Sheretor, it's a Rebbe Kiva Eger, I remember. It says, V'esha Sheretu Tahor V'derech Lo Ayah. He says, has nothing to do with Korban, I mean, of course, the Pashup Shad is, it's to do with Korban Pesach, but he says, V'esha Sheretahor V'derech Lo Ayah. A man who wants to remain from and 100% and maintain his standards, V'derech Lo Ayah. You stay home. If you're traveling, you look around. When you're on vacation and you look around and you look at something, dashgacha, and you're looking for a piece of bread, and maybe you only eat parva bread, and over here you see on the sign it says OUD, and you say, all right, that's good enough. I mean, I'm not going to find anything better. I'm here. Or you allow this is just a plain K. Listen, this is K, whatever it is, the item, it's a plain K. It'll have to do. I mean, because I'm not getting any food. First time I went, I mean, I shouldn't say the first time, but when we went into Western Canada one time, everybody warned me in advance, the one thing you'll have to take with you is bread. Because in Canada, they don't have bread that has a good hashgacha at all, if any hashgacha. Cakes, you got plenty, but no bread. You're not going to find a loaf of bread. Just take a loaf of bread with you when you go, if you want to eat bread, you know. All right. You're making allowances. Stay home. This is going to be good enough. And that is the lesson, so he says. So you're going to bring up children, and you can't push them. Listen, they're living their own life. He says, at the end of life for you, when you get to be older and you need your children to walk you the last mile, that's the sort of the expression that he's using. The end of life usually comes with the help of your children. If they're not going to be as frum as you, you'll end up being more like them, because you're going to either you move in with them or they're going to start taking you and doing different things, and it's unfortunate. I always think of, what was very poignant to me is I had one uncle who was single all his life. And at the end, he had an aide in the house with him. And my wife said, where are you going? He lived around the corner. And I said, this is before Pesach. And I'm afraid, whatever it is. And he was a guy who had yodin yodin. I mean, he was a real, gave a daf yomi for like 60 years. He gave a daf yomi and things like this. But there was limited amount of strength that he had. And he had this woman who wasn't from, who was taking care of him. And I asked him what he's doing about Pesach. He couldn't go away anymore. And so then he was in the hospital. I said, you know what, while he's in the hospital, I went up to the apartment. And I started literally throwing out one thing after another, cleaning up, opening up the refrigerator and all the cabinets, and making the house, his apartment, Pesach thick. In case he came home during Pesach, I didn't know how long he'd be in the hospital, whatever it is. And there was stuff in the freezer I see that had been cordoned off, but it's like, forget it. I just started dumping one thing after the other and making his kitchen Pesach thick as best as I could without scrubbing the walls and things like that, like my mother made me do. But nevertheless, things of that nature. And then when I came up there, Chalamayid, I came up again to see what was doing, and I found out he had come home, and I saw again in the freezer stuff that shouldn't have been there. And I knew right away, I said, this is a situation, it's reality. If people are gonna be running your life when you don't have the strength to run your own life, you gotta make sure that your kids are, if you wanna be particular about the way you carry on, you have to make sure that they carry on the same. Now, very interestingly enough, so this was his lesson to his chevra. That was his introduction to Pirkei Avos. I don't know why he used that, but I remember reading it. It was a few pages long. He was very marach. What is very interesting is the story that I had read many years ago, and I mentioned it once before, I know, because I'll say, because Mark is at the doctor today, I know. He had to go to a specialist. He tore a ligament. The aftermath is he tore a ligament in his hand. The leg is okay, but the ligament in his hand. What?
The leg is bad.
No, it said he tore a ligament in his hand.
That's okay.
Oh, it's the leg. Oh, all right. Whatever it is. So he went. But anyhow, so he's got a problem. But nevertheless, he brought me back that time. I hadn't read anything from the Nesivos. Yeah. He brought me back from Eretz Yisrael that time. And now I see it's in English already too. But this was the very thing. And I read from Shemos, he used to, every time he went, he would bring me back a sefer from Eretz Yisrael. And the sefer was the Nesivos. And in the Nesivos, it was very, very, it was like 20 pages on the Egel in Kisisa. And what he was saying was that how could it be, the question was, that Bnei Yisrael, after they experienced Har Sinai, is an amazing experience. Masherol, you know, Bnei Yisrael, or Cheskel, they all these things that they everybody experienced. How could they see the heavens are opening up and they're seeing whether it's the Kisi HaKavod, whatever they experienced, this amazing thing, and they realize God is what He is. How could it be possible that they could sink to make an Egel just a few weeks later, descend to these depths? How does that happen? And he says that when God created us, we all know what does the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara mean? What does it actually represent? How does that work? And he says we have literally a switch in our brain. And what he goes into, what he tells the whole story of, is it's probably about 5 or 6 pages on the story of Elisha ben Avuya. And it descends into that. And when he talks about the story of Elisha ben Avuya, and he says how he went off the derech, and he said, how did Elisha ben Avuya, give you an example, he says, let's discuss Elisha ben Avuya, and he brings in Rav Meir. How could that possibly happen that it would end up to be that situation that Elisha ben Avuya, who was so great, he was the Gadol HaDor, in reality, he had the ability to be the Gadol HaDor. Even Rebbe Kiva was, he thought he was wonderful. Rebbe Meir, of course, who was the sharpest mind, you know, Rebbe Yehuda Anasi said he once saw, he attributes his mental acuity to the fact that he once saw Rebbe Meir from behind. He never experienced him personally, but he just had he got a glancing look at Rebbe Meir, and it sort of like, infused him with such mental acuity. But the point is, and Rav Meir was his Talmud Muvak of Elisha ben Avuya, which is one of the reasons that we are afraid to go according to Rav Meir, because we're not sure what were her influence, what was his influences. But what turned the tables on him, he was such a gadol. And some of the speculation is that he once saw somebody climbing a ladder and being ki kore kansi parle fanecha, he was being mekayim one of the mitzvahs, and he fell off the ladder and died. So the Abarbanel makes a point also, which is what to answer the question is saying the reality is that even when we're mekayim the mitzvah of ki kore kansi par, we are causing pain to a bird. We are causing pain. When it says Lo Sikachu Eimalabonim, so it says Ki Korei Loloshon is Mik Derech Mikra. We talk about Purim. We talk about all the things. Is what's the most, the roughest part about Purim is what we say about Hamah that we discuss so many times is about Derech Mikra. What is so special about the connection to Haman and the connection to the Amalek? Because the same way it says in the Megillah, the same way it says Asher Karcho Baderech, what happened when Haman came back and he said Balailo Nodad Ashnas HaMelech, and they open up the Sefer HaZichronos. What happens when they open up Sefer HaZichronos? He has this thing, you know, what did we do for Mordechai if he was the person? And he says, and he goes through this whole story with, and he says, you know, and Haman starts giving him advice, what to do, Ashalov Ashbo HaMelech, and if you give Sus Berchovo Ir, and so on and so forth. And then it turns out to be it's for Mordechai. It's a shock to Haman. He thinks they're talking about him. But he goes home. What does it say in the Pasuk in the Megillah? Haman comes home and he says, you know, Vayisaper Haman le'o'avav u'lezeres ishto, what? Eis kol asher karahu. He doesn't speculate. He doesn't associate. The thing is that God has a role in what's happening. He doesn't see the roof caving in. He says, I had a bad day today. You can't believe what just happened. It's unbelievable. It was just Derech Mikra. So that's the connection to the Megillah, the connection to Amalek is Eis Kol Asher Karahu. It just happened. And since it just happened, it just happened. And of course, it's his advisors who have a better handle on the situation, says, I got to tell you something very important here. And this is like a Imizerayudim. And this is God is starting to take an active role in your life. And the roof is beginning to cave in. And it doesn't look good. You know, we have, you know, the corona, whatever it is, it's starting. And this is the beginning of the end. It makes it sound like it's nothing. But you got to be very wary of the situation over here. It sounds like nothing, but taking on an individual situation doesn't necessarily mean anything. But he equates it to Elisha ben Avuya saying like that. And of course, he makes a point that Elisha ben Avuya did give up at the end to do tshuva, but he says he never should have given up at the end because eventually the walls would come down, so to speak, and God would have allowed him to make some sort of, Rav Meir's expression, when the smoke came up from the kever, it says eventually, at some point, after all the tefillas that Rav Meir made. But nevertheless, he said, how did Elisha ben Avuya do that? When they, of course, the famous story with the Arba Nechnusu Lepardes, and he just went off the derech, and he thought the Shtei Rishuyos, it says, you know, he saw Metatron sitting on the side of God, so it can't be Shtei Rishuyos, but seemingly there was somebody sitting next to God. You wouldn't do that. But that's a side issue. The point is that why would he even to entertain such thoughts to do that? God had such faith in him. He's saying, here's a man who is such a gadol. Every man, when he's born, gets a switch in his head. And the switch is, you know, you have that conscience, guilty conscience. I want to do it, but I know I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't. Once you reach the level of Elisha ben Avuya, God says, you know what? I would like after the Aseres Hadibros that they experience, they've reached such a level of godless. They've actually seen HaKadosh Baruch Hu on some level. They've experienced it firsthand. They don't have to have the belief system. They have experienced it. They don't have to say, you just trust me. They experienced it. They hear the voice of God. They hear whatever it is. They hear all these things. So how could these things happen to them? Elisha ben Avuya, he turned off the switch. And he said, there's a man who's going to live on his own without that guilty conscience, and he will walk the straight and narrow. It didn't work out. B'nai Yisrael, the same thing. I'll turn off the switch. They've experienced God firsthand. There's no way they could go over to the dark side, so to speak. There's no chance that that could ever happen to this nation, maybe in future generations, not to them. Turned off the switch. And they descended to that. So even if it was the Erev Rab who fomented this rebellion and fomented these things, but they just didn't have the fortitude to rise up and react to these few thousand people who started their movement that gravitated to these people that were, so to speak, Frimi Eden, and they just didn't rise up to stop it. And that's what the Torah is all about. Of course, we say that is with the understanding that the person's not going to just laugh in your face and say, so what? Which we've all had experiences to, you know, you want to tell somebody something and you know that if you mention it to him, does he really care? Doesn't care. So either you get it, and unfortunately I've had that experience in my shul. When I first started over there, things have changed drastically in the shul over the last 20 years because the old guard has passed on. There's a new generation. But the same way there's a new generation I was very happy, like this Shabbos, it was very interesting. The Balkori came over to me after laning, And it was during Enkel Okeinu, and he whispered to me, one of the Bachurim came over to him and said he went to the bathroom during Parsha Zohar, and he wants to know what he could do to make it up, because I announced, like what you said, not to say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but I told you, the Luach, if you looked in the Luach did say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa to be Mekayim Parsha Zohar. But anyhow, obviously that's a different thought, but I said it over to many people. I say, you know, you don't want to be over of, it's just, it's a middle of the road thing. You're not saying anything wrong by saying you're being Mekayim a mitzvah, Parsha Zohar. But he was, and of course I mentioned it before Laney, and he said to me, he wanted to know, he sent the shliach to ask, he didn't want to say who, but of course I knew who it was, and I said to the guy, I said, I'm very happy that he actually wanted to know. He asked me. He was concerned about being Mekayim the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar. He wanted to know how he could make it up, and I told him, you know, No, the point is, you can't just read it again. We said, you know, you can't just, what are you going to read it again from a Chumash? What? Yeah, well, obviously you could, but you're not going to do it from a Sefer Torah. But you could do it either again from Parsha Kisei. Some say, obviously, when you're reading Parshas B'Shalach tomorrow in the morning, you could do it. Or even as we said, you could be Mekayim also reading the Megillah and have in mind to do all these things. I mean, there's various ways. It doesn't have to fall by the wayside. But nevertheless, so he was relieved to hear whatever it is, the yeshiva boy. But he was actually, so you're happy when people want to know. But the point is, you want to be Mekayim the mitzvah, kedas v'kedin, and you want to do it, and you're interested in doing it. So you have to, you can't take your foot off the pedal. Like I said so many times, when I was already almost 60 years old and my mother was in my house and she followed me when I came out of the bathroom. She happened to fall and step behind me and followed me all the way to the sink. And I said, Ma, what are you following me for? She said, I wanted to see if you still say Asher Yotzah. And I, because she heard after I washed and I said Asher Yotzah, she said, okay. And then what did she ask me? She noticed that I didn't have a shisel negel vaser under my bed. Ooh. How come when I grew up I had the shisel negel vaser? How come I said, yeah, I don't do it. So, yeah, how come? Yeah, why don't you? So, I mean, various things. And I once mentioned to her about something that happened. And I said, I feel like God's giving me a patch. So instead of saying, don't feel so bad, whatever it is, she said, yes. Yeah, so what are you going to do about it? But, you know, that's the way she thinks, you know, things like that. So I said one time, and I was thinking about it, and I said, maybe, you know, I was thinking that maybe I should, you know, look at my mezuzahs, change my mezuzahs. She says, maybe you should, you know. So those are the answers that I always got. More than for my father was more laid back about it. He would show me, you know, what he did was my father's way of doing it was, like I said, he would buy me a sefer. Like if he thought I was doing something wrong, he didn't come out and tell me. He would buy me a sefer, and then he dog-eared a page, and then he said, did you read the sefer I sent you? And I said, I didn't get around to it yet. He says, open it up, the page I want you to read, the corner is bent. So when you open it up, you'll see. And that's the way he gave it to me. And he would say, I want you to read that page. If you don't understand it, call me, we'll talk about it.
Take two in the morning.
Right? That's it. So, but you take your foot off the pedal, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's lesson to us from the thing, don't take your foot off the pedal. And so, I mean, to me, these are the lessons that I experienced in my life that, you know, as you get older, you start to think, and that's why I said, you know, I had this ongoing fight. A lot of us go through growing pains in the teenage years, the teenage angst, and various things. And when I got married, when I, you know, I hugged my father before we marched down the aisle, and I said to him, and I just looked at him, and I started to, you know, we were like that. I said, I just want you to know, I understand a lot of things now. And he said, that's all I ever wanted you to understand. And he understood what I meant. We had some conversations about various topics. And he just wanted you to grow up and understand. And little by little, we would have the questions and we would talk about it. And he would say, I said, now I get it. Okay, we're making progress. You understand. And it keeps on going and keeps on going. And that's what we have to be careful of. Is there anything? Oh, yeah. It says in the parasha, Aches Shapso Sai Tishmoru. What is this Aches Shapso Sai Tishmoru? So we have a whole drusha on what does it mean, Shapso Sai. So it's obviously that we say that we want you to be Mekayim many Shabbosos. So if you're happy Kuach Nefesh, so do it. I had an experience with a few times in my life, but one time in particular when, my son opened up his head on a Shabbos afternoon. It was Memorial Day weekend when Moshe was 4 years old, and he cracked his head on, we had a marble coffee table with sharp points, and he was practicing jumping off backwards off the couch, and he finally hit his head on the coffee table. My oldest son ran upstairs and says, Moshe's head, he's gushing blood. And I went downstairs and I saw it. So Rifki said to me, so what are we going to do? I said, what do you mean, what am I going to do? We're taking him to the hospital, whatever it is. So I said, all right, I'll call a taxi. But then, of course, they said, they'll be there in 10 minutes. I said, doesn't work. I got in my car and I drove him to the hospital. And of course, he needed a number of stitches. And what transpired after that? When I came to shul, so it was all over pretty fast. And regardless of the fact that they queried him after I told them what happened, they asked my son what happened, and I said, I told you what happened. They said, shut up, we're asking him. So they wanted to know in those days. This is already 30, this is, I started to say 30 years ago, it's closer to 40 years ago. But he's 40, he's, yeah, his birthday this week, he's 40. But anyhow, so this is the situation. So what happened? So I went over to, I was in Mincha Shabbos, I told Rabbi Albershtam what happened, and I said, what should I have done? He said, L'chaira, basically what you're supposed to do is let the motor keep running, don't shut off the motor in the car. I said, so what happens now if I leave the motor running and somebody steals the car and runs over somebody with the car because he took it for a joyride? He said, okay, so now what do I do with the key? Because there was no Erev in Flatbush 40 years ago. There was no Erev in Flatbush yet. So, what? Well, or at least I don't know. I wasn't carrying in the Erev, at least then. I don't know, remember if there was, I don't think there was an Erev, but whatever it is. I was concerned about the key. But I hid it in the well of the car, and I didn't walk away with the key, and it was still there later. After Shabbos. But then after I took him home, I went to Shul for Mincha, and I went to the Rebbe, and I asked him, and he told me all these things. But of course, so I went through. We go through experiences, and you want to do the best you can. But as it just came to mind, all these things that happened. I came to him another time on a Friday night. I had an experience during the morning when I ran out of merchandise on another time. I wasn't in business long for myself and I needed something. And I had to get in the car and go someplace where I totally had no idea, in near the Long Island Railroad tracks, on the thing. And when I just had no idea, I took out a map. I was trying to figure out where I was because there were no street signs. It was in a desolate area. And I stopped the car, put it into park, and I started looking at the map. And when I looked at the map, all of a sudden, while I was reading the map, a bar came down on my car. I was sitting on railroad tracks. So it came down on the hood of my station wagon. I had a Chevy wagon. And I said, whoa, where am I? And I was on those tracks there along the Review Avenue where they have the tracks. I didn't know. I had no idea where I was. And I was stopped parking. And I saw a police car on the other side. Just the two cops were sitting and having a donut and coffee. And, of course, it was a desolate area. And they just started going like that. So I put the car in reverse and gunned the engine. And I put the car as fast as I could to go backwards. And, of course, when I went backwards with the force that I did, I cracked the bar behind me, which I didn't realize came down on the car behind the car. And I literally knocked it off its moorings there, and it was laying there, and the cops were just in shock. But I figured to myself, listen, it's what really happened. It takes usually, my experience is, it takes a few minutes, or at least a couple of minutes, till until the train comes anyhow, so it really wasn't that much danger. But as soon as I was had that thought, the train came whizzing by. And I was thinking to myself, woo. And then when I finally found a place where I had to go to pick up a few jars of pickles, as it was, and pickled tomatoes, I went, I found a place, and as I'm backing in, the electric door comes down on the hood of my car. And the guy, it was lunch, I came in, it was lunch break, and the guy pushed the button without looking, and of course it starts to grind into the hood, you know, because it doesn't stop. Didn't have the stop mechanism when it hits. But the guy saw, I yelled out, what are you doing? And he hit the button again and let the door go up. I wasn't in danger, but my car was gonna get a nice dent or whatever it is. But anyhow, so I was laughing and I came to shul that night and I said to Rabbi Halberstam, what happened? And I was just saying, Eis kol asher karo. And Rabbi Halberstam's reaction to me was, he said to me, Shmuel, what did you do today? I always remember because I reminded him and he said, what did you do? And he was telling me, this is not Eis kol asher karo. This is not, you know, these are messages. Everything in life is messages. Don't lose sight of the messages. It's not Eis kol asher karo. What? Exactly. And I said, I don't know. And I didn't. I hadn't done anything wrong, but whatever it is. He just looked at me and he said, Shmuel, what did you do? And that's it. Because if you're really watching and you're really thinking and you believe that the Machzis HaShekel is Kofi Nafsho, because you have to keep reminding yourself there is a God above. So Acha Shapso Sai Tishmoru is for two reasons. It's one is obviously for Menuchas HaNefesh. And I remember my sister coming home after the first year. She's 3 years older than me, but she was her first year in college, and she said she was in class and she was explaining to a couple of people in one of her classes that she had to leave, and it was Friday, and she was explaining to the Shegits the whole idea of Shabbos, that, you know, the, you can't do this. And his reaction was, wow, this is fantastic. He thought it was great. I don't know whatever happened. She never knew what happened. You know, he wasn't going to change his religion because of it. But what is this all about? This is such a blessing, he said. You mean you just shut down for one day a week? This is great. Imagine. So you get the Menuchas HaNefesh, but it's for the second reason is Kol Osem Bo Melacha. Malacha is not a voda. Kol Oseh Bo Malacha, most you must. We still have to remember that is Ki Os He Beini Uveinechem. God is saying, I always want you. It's not just for you to rest. It's for you to rest. But there's an Isa Malacha because Uvayom Hashvi Shavas Vayinofash. I stopped work and it's a Zeche Lamase Bereshis. Always keep that in mind. It's not just that I want to give you a day of rest. Yes. I want to give you a day of rest, but I'm giving you an Issa Malacha because I stop work and everything is Zeche L'Maaseh Bereishis. Okay. I think that's about
the... Before we conclude, I want to thank Rabbi Mayevsky very, very much for the spur of the moment, for giving such a beautiful shiur. I want to say a Mizmor Tehillim for my chaver, Mark Katz, son-in-law of Rabbi Michal Miller. He's now in the hospital. And he needs rachamim, so I want to say one mizmor of Tehillim. Shemal tzvimamakim k'nasicha Adonai, Adonai shirayim oli tiyeno z'rachamim shalos d'kol tachim Adonai, im avoynos tishmoyo, adonai v'yemot tzvimamakim k'nas b'cholman t'vorei, v'lis yarei kivis anafi v'lom t'opi, v'ashib Adonai yishrenim v'arekir, shrenim v'arekir, v'achel yishol el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed, v'yarebei moi v'adus, v'hu yifte es yisrael mikol,
To be continued, I didn't yeah, go ahead.
Saying Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov Moshe Aaron David Shlomo who Yivarech Rabbi Yisachila Elchanan Moshe Rufal Ben Hadasa Bavur Shehatzibor Mispal LeMavuray Vizchazek Kadosh Yimolei Rachdim Aleh Olav LeYachalimoy Ulurapoy Soy Ulurachazikoy Ulurachayir Soy VeYishlach Loi Mehira Rufu Shlomo Nashemayim. Lord Bachevorov, Shasagidov, I hope to be home tomorrow at some point in time. If you do want to come over, please call me before.
Hey,
please call before. Make sure I'm still
on. Mask on.
I'm okay, but if you want to stay away, I understand.
My
doctor told me I'm okay, so
no, you put the
I'm
mask
out of danger.
On his Purim, you put masks on. Okay, boys. I'll get in Freilich and Purim to work.
Freilich and Purim.
Don't stress your voice. Yeah, try to.
Okay, you're not contagious.
Yeah, take it easy.
You want to know why?
Be well.
I call up the. They speak. I call up the. I speak to Moshe Shabbos. I tell him, you know. He says, nah, maybe we can move it over there.
Not for my family.
So I tell him.
You know what he is? Tell him.
He's coming here. There are tons of people working on their insurance and setting up appointments. And he transfers them. What's the matter with you? It's the Kuach Nefesh. You have a problem with it? Are you doing it for yourself or are you doing it for the kids? I said, I'll tell you, give me a half an hour to calm down. I will come back. You speak with your wife. Tell me what she says.
Why?
Because you know, where did it come from? So I'm now waiting for the, you know, how we're going to get there if we do. Well, before.
You got to watch for that.
Oi, everyone would have packed off. Everyone has a problem. So I may not be here. I'm poor. I said, I told him I have a Megillah ready.